CliffCentral.com.
We like this, don't we? Fuss of the People, Pumped Up Kicks. There's an interesting article in Entrepreneur magazine today. Ronnie Uptierka. Remember him? We had him in here a short while ago.
Yeah.
He wrote an interesting article, which you might want to read. But here are the two quotes that I just want to bring out of this, because it's quite cool to see. Stephen Hawking, just to kind of put us in our place as humans, Stephen Hawking, the great physicist, says, "We are just an advanced breed of monkeys on a minor planet of a very average star. But we can understand the universe, and that makes us something special." And then a quote from Aristotle that Ronnie Uptierka uses as well. "It is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it." That's a cool way to put things, Aristotle and Stephen Hawking.
To entertain a thought without accepting it. Do you think a lot of us are capable of doing that?
Hell no.
Hell no.
Most of us accept whatever the hell comes into our minds. And then there are those people who just won't accept anything that comes into their minds.
Yeah.
Those people can't be terrifically educated. See, basically they're saying, it doesn't matter whether you agree or you disagree with something. You just have to be able to make space in your mind for it. Look at it, go, that's possible, or that's probable, or that's highly unlikely. And then put it away again.
And move on.
Right. It doesn't have to form part of your belief system. But it is interesting. And I just thought that those two quotes were worth mentioning this morning. All right, listen, we've spoken about lots of different people on the show, lots of different things that go on in society, lots of different lifestyles people choose. And sometimes, you know, we tend to focus on people who are, you know, these leaders of society, these people who kind of project the image of being totally in control of their lives, these people who make it seem like they've got everything going right. They've never made a mistake. They've never had to do anything that the rest of society didn't approve of. And I don't know if those people are always the most interesting. Do you agree?
Yeah, to a degree, yes.
Sometimes the most interesting people are the ones who've had a life that isn't always on the middle of the road. They sometimes veer off to the left or they veer off to the right. And sometimes they learn things that the rest of us never learn. Sometimes they discover things that the rest of us never discover. And I think maybe it would be worthwhile for us to live vicariously through some of the people who veered to the left or veered to the right and done things in their lives that most of us will never do, either because we don't want to or because we're too scared or because life just hasn't ended up that way for us. So I think it would be cool this morning to welcome to the studio Lauren. And we're not going to give your name that you worked under or any of that stuff, but it's fascinating to me that you are here this morning to tell us about your life for 3 years as Pretoria's highest paid working girl, or certainly one of them. I mean, that's a hell of a life to lead.
It is, most definitely, Gareth.
Nice to see you.
And you, yeah. And you. Yes, it's a story that I feel coming... Yeah, really out with is one that can inspire some people, definitely.
Well, what made you decide that you were going to go public with your story? Is it kind of for you a way of getting your laundry out there so that you don't have to hide who you are and hide where you've been?
Partly that, and partly because I'm not ashamed of it. The industry, whether or not I condone it, it made me very much who I am today. I'm busy studying my degree in psychology.
Right.
You
said you're not ashamed of your life. Are you not ashamed of what you've done, or you're not ashamed of you?
Because those I'm not are quite, ashamed of me.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's important.
Yes.
I mean, that's also probably one of the reasons that you can talk about this. If you were ashamed of you, mm-hmm. you'd be hiding in the shadows, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, I don't even know where to begin with this because there's so many questions. When we think about being a call girl, being a basically a highly paid prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling your body, and there are different levels of this.
Yeah.
You know, they're the girls that we see on Oxford Street late at night who kind of stick their leg out into the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what kind of money those girls earn, but they can't be earning the kind of money that you were as a high-paid call girl in mm-hmm. Pretoria. What sort of money were you making while you were doing this work?
I was I worked about 4 days a week, uh-huh. and normal was 7-hour day, and I'd clear about between 50,000 and 60,000 rand a month.
Cash usually?
Yes.
Wow. Because I suppose a lot of the guys who were coming to you were not necessarily guys who wanted anybody to know that they were coming to you.
Exactly.
Most of them married?
Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Now, is the amount of money that you're earning, is that a huge part of the appeal for when girls make the decision to go into the industry?
Most definitely, yes, yes. And once those girls get used to that sort of lifestyle and obviously get drawn in by the drugs, it's very difficult for them to leave.
So drugs and prostitution usually go together.
They do. They're very close.
And usually the girls will start doing the sex because they need the money to fuel the drug habit.
That's correct.
So that's how you get pulled in, right?
Yeah.
So how did it start for you? I mean, you know, you didn't decide at the age of 15, what I really want to do is grow up and be a call girl.
Definitely not, no. I also, as mentioned in my email, I matriculated as an honor student in school.
Right.
So not, it wasn't my only option.
You weren't
option.
Some kind of washed up failure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I was brought up by an ex-madam. My mother was a madam when she was a little bit older than I am now. And she got busted and she got arrested and luckily she got off. But brought up with a much more open mind, I'd put it in mm-hmm. in that sense.
So there was never any kind of judgment about sex or any of that stuff?
No.
Okay.
In the family, no. No. With my mother, no.
All right, so that kind of opens you up to this and you think, oh, well, you know, it's not as bad as maybe someone who's brought up in a very, very strict household might think this is something completely unacceptable.
Absolutely. No, she believed that if you've got the appeal obviously on the outside, then why not use it to your advantage? So,
okay.
Not really believing so much in an intelligent mind, but
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So am I picking up that maybe you and your mom didn't get along so well?
We actually were incredibly close.
Okay.
Incredibly close.
Are you still?
No. We have no contact. She's actually written me off. Yes.
So tell me about this. When you are a girl who's just finished, you've matriculated, you've done really well, you've got the world at your feet.
Mm.
How do you go from that? And it seems like a more or less stable family background.
Yes.
How do you go then from that into being a call girl and getting into drugs?
Look, I did go study after school. I wasn't sure what I wanted to study.
Yeah.
So I studied a diploma in personal training. After that, obviously going between sort of office jobs, office admin jobs. Anyone knows that, I mean, most office admin jobs don't pay very well.
Hmm.
And, I mean, to live nowadays is very expensive.
Sure.
And I sat with my mom one day and, you know, the original idea was that I was going to look for a dominatrix job.
Just, it has to be said, she's in pretty damn good shape. I mean, you look amazing. You're obviously very fit.
Thank you.
You've kept yourself in shape. That's part of the reason that, you know, you obviously got the work.
Yes.
If you look terrible, no one's going to come to you.
No, of course. Also, I think probably the drug habit kept me quite skinny, yes. And whereas now it's more the gym and the eating properly.
All right. So you sat down with your mom.
Yes.
So how does this conversation happen?
I think she was also at a point where she was tired of seeing me struggle money-wise.
Mm-hmm. Was she helping you out?
No, funnily okay. enough, okay. not really, no.
All right.
That would be more on my dad's side
okay.
and my brother's side as well.
Okay.
Which also obviously makes a person feel like a burden.
Okay, but it's still it's a leap. I'm trying to understand, and I'm really not in any position to judge anything, but you know, the need for money. I mean, couldn't you rather just live within your means? Or was it so important to have a lot more money that you thought, well, this is definitely a better way to go?
I was brought up. My mom is an incredibly materialistic person. To live within my means, yes. If I could have earned a salary, then definitely, I agree. I would have done that. But I struggled to find any sort of well-paying job.
Okay. How much were you looking for?
Geez, at that time. Yeah, not a hell of a lot. I would have probably just over about 10 grand.
Okay.
And it was incredibly difficult.
Okay, so you go, well, maybe I'll sleep with guys and get paid.
The original idea was to be a dominatrix.
Oh,
yeah. Does that pay well, being a dominatrix?
I don't know. It's not something that... I found on the internet after that. So sort of sitting together, we found this establishment and went from there, yeah.
So do you go enroll there? How does it work?
No, you're the same. You go for an interview. Obviously, everything's explained to you. And, yeah, you're told, obviously, if you can work there or you can't.
You know that TV series Billions, right? The guy who is the DA, the district attorney.
Yes.
He runs the office that investigates it. He and his wife are into S&M. They're into bondage and all of this stuff. So they go to these dingy clubs late at night, and there's a woman in leather who whips them. And he is allowed to do this and she's allowed to do it as long as they tell each other. They've got to be honest about it with each other.
Mm-hmm. They also do it together at home.
They also do it together where he'll tie her up or she'll tie him up and there'll be ball gags and there'll be whips and stuff. And for some people, this is incredibly exciting. Is that the kind of stuff you would do?
Look, it's a variety of things. You obviously get all different types of people that go there. I eventually call it my bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
And to basically say, obviously, that I've tried that, I don't know, I like it or I don't like it.
Did you like it?
It depends what's the S&M.
Yeah.
No, that was not my thing, definitely not.
And the being a dominatrix? Did it feel good to kind of be in control?
I think towards the end it did.
Uh-huh.
I established that the reason why I was able to do the job was because of sort of previous events in my life where I'd been out of control. So I lost control with men. And abusive relationships.
Okay.
And for me, it was an odd way of healing because I was always in control.
And do you ease into that? Like in the beginning, you must have been nervous. You wouldn't have known what to do.
No, of course.
It's very scary.
Yes, yes. And going into the industry, obviously very naive and wanting to trust girls that you meet
What kind of guys come, is there a kind of guy who comes to a dominatrix?
No. It's all types of guys, but it was, I'd say, more upper class gentlemen.
Is it people you would never expect?
It's all types of people. So really, there isn't really a specific type. Some of them, I'd say about 90% of them are married. Some very happily so, some not so happily so.
This is their kink on the side.
Yes, that's correct.
And they come to you, maybe they've got very, very high pressured careers.
Perhaps.
Maybe they work for big corporations. Maybe they're even the CEO,
that's
right?
That's correct, yes.
Do you ever know any of this stuff about them? Do you sit and talk to them, or do you just get straight down to the whipping and smashing of their balls?
No. And I must tell you, obviously, I didn't end up doing the dominatrix thing.
You didn't?
It was just the working girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So when you arrived at the agency where you worked, you said
agency.
That,
that's a kind.
I don't know.
Is that what you would call it?
What, I don't know what to call it.
A gentleman's lounge.
Okay.
So you arrive there, and then you go through an interview process? How does that all work?
Yes, yes.
And who interviews you? The person who owns the place?
That's correct.
Is it a he?
It is a he.
And what kind of questions do they ask?
Basically, he's someone I respect a lot, a hell of a lot.
Even now?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Right.
You still get along and...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't sort of beat around the bush. Very straightforward, blunt. Obviously tells you, look, this is what you're in for. And yeah, go ahead and they see how you do.
Okay, so you go in, you have the interview. He tells you what you're in for. Do you sign up for a certain list of things? Or do you say, well, I'll just take my chances and see how much I can make?
You are, there's a set price for certain things. And you are not allowed to ask for more than that.
Do you sign up for all of them?
You can say when you obviously begin working there, the restrictions. So if, for example, you don't want to do multiracial clients, if you are happy with doing sort of bookings with married couples, because you do get married couples that go
where both
there.
The husband and the wife pull
That's
in?
That's correct, yes.
Huh.
Yes.
Did you have any restrictions like that?
I did.
What did you say?
My restrictions, I did not do any multiracial clients.
Hmm.
And yeah, I think that was pretty much. And no sort of if lesbian couple comes.
Oh, you were careful of the lesbians. Lesbians and blacks, pretty much.
Well, blacks, coloreds, Indians.
Yes, no, but also it was the same. It was even Chinese people.
Okay, so hang on. What's the problem with the lesbian thing? You were worried that they'd be too rough.
You never know. I never.
It's just not
actually,
your thing.
It's not. It's not. Look, you do in bookings. You do sort of. We will call it sort of the doubles experience.
Yeah.
Where these threesomes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't. Again, I can't say well that's bad or that's good because when people date, they have their preferences.
That's true.
Some people like to have relationships with other people of other races. Some people like to have. Relationships with people of the same or other genders. It's up to you, personal choice.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you sign up for this stuff, but I would imagine it's pretty scary because you don't know who's going to walk through the door. Do you clock in at this place? Do you take the guys to your house?
No.
How does it work?
It's an establishment. It's
okay,
nothing.
So guys come in there.
Yes. That was like a pun intended, sorry.
Okay, yeah, all right. Leave the jokes to me.
Okay.
All right. So the guys arrive there, and then what, is there a bar, and you sit around and you talk for a while, and then you go off to the bedroom?
It is, yes. There's a big area, obviously, for socializing. They obviously go through a menu of who they would like to choose. Some obviously.
A menu?
Yes, that's right.
What, do you walk in front of them?
No.
Oh. Do you like parade? Like in ancient Egypt when you choose a slave? kind of, none of that.
No. That would really have made it felt like a meat market, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, and I would insist always, if someone booked me, to speak to them personally, obviously, in the booking for 15 minutes before, with the basic knowledge that I have about behavioral psychology and body language, I would see if any red flags would sort of go off.
What are the red flags? Help us here. I think this might help people who are not necessarily called girls, but who might need to. There are a lot of girls who choose bad guys.
No, absolutely. I used to be one of them.
Yeah.
And if someone was very hesitant to talk about themselves, you can sort of. It's like a gut instinct feeling if someone's a bit cold.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's what they talk about. I would always make it sort of a very light-hearted conversation. And
what do you talk about with someone who you know you're about to be paid for sex with? You? So it's been really warm today.
Look, I think that first of all, in the industry, they don't expect to meet sort of an intelligent person.
Yeah, so they're expecting to meet some dumb girl who's just going to, you know, bang them.
There you go.
Right.
And, so we talk about anything, what they do for a living, if they're married, do they have kids, what are their hobbies. I'd obviously throw in a few of my hobbies. But very, very carefully structured conversation to sort of sum them up, if I can put it that way.
Now, I've always been intrigued because you'll often see young, attractive women who are married to old, overweight, ugly men because they're very rich, right? They've got a lot of money. And I always think to myself, how do these women bring themselves to have sex with these ugly monsters? Now, if you were repulsed by a client, would you turn them down or would you have sex with them anyway, and how do you then block that, having sex with someone who...
Jeez, good question.
...who repulses you?
Yeah, look, there's... I think you eventually, you stop looking at the physical. Mm. Wow. You don't even see the physical
anymore.
You
can do that? You can shut it out?
Yes. People just become faces, and... I just thought that with every conversation that I have, there would be some form of beauty in the conversation, something of knowledge that I could extract and learn from that specific person. Be it whether they talk about the industry that they're in, or there's always, for me, I use the knowledge. I love the knowledge.
Okay.
And the people skills.
And then when it gets to the actual sex, I mean, you got to use condoms.
Absolutely.
That's non-negotiable. Absolutely. And you feel safe because despite the fact that you've checked them out psychologically, and I want to know what happens if you decide, I'm out of here, this is not the guy for me, can you call the boss over and he sorts it out?
They do have panic buttons in the room.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Look, generally, I mean, you can sometimes have a client that is armed. You can see it.
What do you do if a client's armed?
Being someone that loves shooting myself, not myself. There you go, shooting at the range.
I wish Oscar Pistorius had you as a girlfriend. The story might have ended differently. Yeah?
No, I would. Yeah, I think I would have gunned him down from behind the bathroom. So.
All right, so what happens? The guy's got a sidearm.
Yeah, so as long as, in my opinion, obviously, if you take a weapon out and you put it down, you want me to see it, then it's of no threat to me.
Okay.
But sometimes you catch people out of your peripheral vision trying to put the gun under the bed.
Ooh.
And they've been awake for a few days.
Uh-oh.
They're on something. Yeah.
Danger.
I'd say those are pretty draining bookings, where you've really got to be very wary. Like I said, I did just out of my own, I started training one-on-one with a coach for Krav Maga, how to disarm, should a client point a firearm at
me. Is that like a martial art?
It's Israeli self-defense.
Okay.
Yes. So should anything happen where, I mean, if someone wants to shoot you in the head, you're not really going to have time to run to a panic button.
No, sure.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out. It sounds like a bit of, like, law of the jungle survival in some ways. But there must also have been those occasions where you feel pretty helpless, even though you're not necessarily under threat, because you're lying there and you're thinking, this is not fun at all. There must have been occasions where you're like, I'm not enjoying this at all. The money's not worth it tonight.
Absolutely.
You know, because we all go through ups and downs. And I mean, I know couples have been together for years.
Yes.
And sometimes they're just not keen for each other.
Absolutely.
You just have to grin and bear it?
Yes, I would say so. Look, the idea also came then when it became a struggle for me at times to... I actually proposed the idea to my boss of becoming the in-house counselor that the girls could rent to. So they would come for 45-minute sessions one-on-one with me, and they would be able to vent and talk. Because obviously in that industry, it's not – a lot of people's families don't know that they work there.
No.
And they don't have someone to talk to.
It's lonely.
Yes.
Now, can I ask – what are some of the things that the girls would vent about? Because I think a lot of us assume that, oh, well, if a woman who is, you know, old enough of age makes a decision to go into the industry, then it's her decision. Obviously, it's not harmful to her in any way.
Mm.
But yet these girls would still need to vent after the fact. So what kind of things would they vent about?
Look, they could have had a bad booking, a bad experience.
Do you explain, like, a bad booking? What does that mean?
If
got violent?
Yes, if they were made to feel really, really uncomfortable in some way. Also, you could see sort of with the graduation of the drug use, and when they, you know, sort of started really getting into the hard tack, and how obviously their emotions would be all over the place.
Hmm.
So to vent just about that, to sort of keep them going, obviously the best way that I could, Yeah.
So much as we'd like to think that, you know, these are empowered women making decisions, it does still have a psychological impact on them as sex workers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember I read, I think it was Jenna Jameson's book about the porn industry, and she said, you know, a lot of people would want to imagine, especially men, want to imagine these are women who just really enjoy sex and they like doing porn.
Yeah.
And they've chosen that. But a lot of these girls are very damaged. A lot of them have very bad backgrounds. A lot of them are compromised by drug use, by alcoholism, by abuse, whatever it might be that has held them back.
Mm.
And this is just their best option. It's not necessarily a choice.
Absolutely. A lot of them do come from very bad backgrounds.
So with you, were the drugs from the beginning?
I would say probably about a month into it. I got into the cat.
Does that help you cope with the choice in lifestyle, or is it just an add-on, like a fun thing?
It definitely, because I don't believe it's a mind-altering, when you first obviously use it, substance. Mm. It's something that gives you energy. And you can understand, obviously, your last client of the day needs to be like your first client of the day.
How many guys in a day?
Look, it varied.
You said you work 4 days a week.
Yes. There was also
what's your busiest day?
The busiest day, it would be if I had sort of back-to-back only one-hour clients.
Wow.
But a lot of the time, there were group bookings. So a lot of guys, a lot of girls, and they would book you.
Like a gangbang?
No, not necessarily, no. No. There would be obviously rooms for when people wanted to go do their thing. So
hang on. In other words, a group of guys,
mm-hmm.
or a group of couples, whatever it might be,
yes.
they would actually go there in a group?
Absolutely.
And then
book for...
It's like a social occasion.
There you go. Book for 5 to 7 hours. And
wow.
That's... Yeah. So a lot of it...
This I did not know. Did you know that?
No. I'm trying to
Fantastic.
Take it in and digest
Learning
it.
Learning things yeah. here.
That's sure. Okay.
It's
hey, guys.
The
why don't we skip the club tonight? Let's go to this gentleman's lounge.
Yeah.
Mm.
For 5 to 7 right. hours. 5 to 7 hours. That's a lot of money spent.
That is a lot of money spent.
What does that cost these people?
Quite a bit.
Are we talking into the tens, hundreds of thousands?
A booking like that, definitely over the 10,000s, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, depending obviously on how many people are there.
Now, what do you do as the sex worker when your client can't get it up and he's struggling for whatever reason? Maybe he's high on something, or maybe he's just too nervous, whatever
say,
the reason may be.
Say,
I mean, what do you do?
Because you say, thank you, Jesus, and you take the money, and you say to him, get out of here.
I mean, what do you do? Because do you have to worry about his precious little ego and try and make him feel like he's not worthless in that moment? What do you do? How do you handle that situation?
The funniest thing is you find that most of the people that go there are very lonely people.
Huh.
So I think just the attention on them would help them feel better. When it came to cases like that, I'm someone that obviously understands how the body works. I think also I might be a little bit intimidating in the first meeting.
So guys get a little shriveled dick when they meet you the first
time. A little bit nervous.
They're like, oh my God.
No, but then I was the kind of person that out of principle – you know, extras and that, I wouldn't charge because
what
they
do you
didn't
mean?
Receive anything.
Like, explain to me. So the guy comes in, he can't get it up. You mm-hmm. try everything in your power and he still can't get it up. Mm-hmm. So you don't charge him?
No. Well, if I try everything in my power, yes, then I definitely yeah.
But he starts
him.
To pay for, like, your time.
Yes.
But you're not going to charge him for all the other stuff.
No. Look, there was no freebies ever.
Okay, good. So what's the flat rate? What's like the minimum he's going to end up paying?
We could say probably about at least $1,500.
Okay. All right. Do you reckon that there are girls who charge more than that at a basic level?
Absolutely. Yes. I think those are girls that work privately.
Hmm.
My issue, I always said that, you know, if you're going to be dumb, at least be smart about it. I wouldn't want to work, obviously, out of my house or where there's no security. That's obviously how how a lot of the girls end up dead.
Now, while you were working there for four days a week, were you living on your own?
I was in the beginning.
Okay.
I then met my boyfriend that I'm living with now.
Okay.
And
he knew what you were doing when you met?
Yes, I am. Yeah, unashamedly honest, I cannot lie.
Okay, so if he knew what you were doing at the time, was he one of your clients, or
no.
How did you meet him?
No, no, I didn't meet him there.
Okay.
He was not one of my clients. I met him at an MMA event.
Okay.
And he always said to me that, because obviously studying the degree in psychology and my love for people and helping people, he saw what was in my heart, and he understood the reasons why I was doing it.
But you carried on doing this for a while you were still with him?
For a couple of months.
And he understood?
He understood. It was not, I don't think any partner would be comfortable.
No.
But he always said to me that he could see what was in my heart and why I was doing it.
That takes some guy to be able to put that aside.
Mm. He's a.
I don't know how many guys could do that.
One.
Right, so he's obviously the one. I mean, you want to marry this guy.
That's definitely true.
So how did you extract yourself from that world?
It's funny. When it came to the drug addiction, I always called myself a functional user.
Mm-hmm. Which means that you were living your life, you were doing normal stuff, you had your finances in order.
There you go.
You never... I mean, you must have obviously ruined relationships. You were talking about your mom earlier. So you probably don't have great relations with family and some old friends.
Mm.
But you could handle the drugs as far as the outside world was concerned.
Yes. So it sounds a little bit twisted, but I actually sort of learned how to look and act like I was on absolutely nothing.
Huh.
Look, when more of the heart attack came in, when the girls obviously graduate to crystal meth, and it's an industry that breeds sadism. So a lot of the girls would mix, say, their cat with crystal meth and then give it to a new girl. And so the girl would then be a flash in the pan. It was someone that was popular, more popular than them.
They would actually sabotage.
Absolutely. Spiking of drinks.
Wow.
Because
there's competition, right?
Of course. If you put that many girls together in one room, the politics are unbelievable.
Mm. So, I mean, if back in the day you were the highest earner,
I was what you are from.
That would mean that you had a target on your back the whole time.
Absolutely.
Jeez.
Absolutely.
So you're constantly watching out for the other girls.
You've got to be incredibly wary.
Bad enough that the men are dangerous, but now you also have to look out for the girls.
Absolutely. Look, you have to be incredibly wary. That's also where I learned more about the body language and more about... I loved reading about psychopathy. So definitely had a target on the back at one stage, and especially I think when I was the in-house counselor.
You'd think that would help you, like the girls would trust you more, they'd say, oh, well, she's a good person to talk to, she's my friend, but no, you say that almost made it worse.
Some of them, and it is obviously a natural reaction sometimes when people do open up, if you know how to make them open up to you. You now know secrets that they don't want anyone to know.
So they're vulnerable.
Yes.
Gee, this is something else. So these guys who would come to you, before we get onto the drugs, because I want to hear about the crystal meth and how that works as opposed to cat.
Mm.
These guys who would come to you, were they all kind of older as well? Or were there guys in their 20s?
Guys in their 20s, older guys. Yeah.
Were they all overweight and unattractive?
No.
Huh. And some of them, you say, happily married?
Yes.
You'd talk to them, and they were able to reconcile in their heads that their wife is at home looking after the kids, but they're there with you.
Absolutely. They would, they said they would, they need a little bit of excitement on the side.
Hmm.
It's a bit of a thrill for most, I think.
And I suppose they thought, well, as long as she doesn't know, And as long as I don't go back with any diseases or, you know, she doesn't check the bank account, I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys, I suppose, also come to you and then tell you horrible stories about how it didn't work out that way.
In what sense?
Well, I would imagine that there must have been some wives who found out.
Personally,
do you ever have to deal with that?
With any clients of mine, no.
Absolute confidentiality, discretion, all
absolutely,
of that stuff.
Absolutely.
Look, so you've never dealt with like an angry wife who comes
banging
at the door asking for you?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Wow.
No, so personally I didn't have any experience with that, no. Thank goodness.
Then the drugs. Let's get onto that for a second. So we know more or less that Kat is kind of like a street cocaine, right?
Ephedrine.
Okay, so it gives you energy, it perks you the hell up.
Mm-hmm.
You bounce around the room a little bit. But what does crystal meth do, and what is that like, and how do you take it, and all of that stuff?
Crystal meth, you can also chop up and schnaff like you would do with cat.
Okay, with cat, yeah.
Or you can, obviously the girls would graduate and then they'd start smoking lolly.
So you saw definitely what a lot of people say is that there's a progression.
Absolutely.
You go up the pyramid and eventually you end up on heroin.
And also the in-house counseling was obviously to try and prevent that, to make the girls aware of, look, it's not an industry where you necessarily find a best friend because it's business.
Hmm.
So the girls would progress sometimes to smoking lolly.
What's lolly?
It's like a crack pipe with crystal meth in it.
Okay.
I do believe that there were some girls that were caught using heroin, but fired very shortly afterwards.
How expensive is this?
The drugs?
Yeah.
Look, there was a point when I was probably spending about at least 10 grand a month just on that.
Hmm.
Yeah. And with the crystal meth, it was especially not something I wanted to use every day. I got off on the fact that I was challenging how strong my mind was. And I would say like, okay, well, every Friday is meth day.
Huh.
And come Saturday, then everything would be fine. I'd obviously sort of learned how to cycle that I wouldn't hit the downer. So it's challenging my mind. And the strength of it, definitely.
Wow. Did you have these experiences sometimes with the guys who were there? I mean, like they would say to you, oh, let's do a line or something together.
Sometimes they would, yes. Also, obviously, then that's why... I mean, the information, the knowledge that you learn about drugs is invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know when something's been laced with something else.
Oh, wow.
Because
these guys might try to, like, knock you out with this stuff.
No. It's, for example, a crystal meth user will want someone else to use crystal meth with them.
Oh.
Yeah.
So there's different behavioral patterns that
absolutely
go with this.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I can totally see how you'd be interested in psychology.
Mm.
Having been you see the deep, dark, secret people.
Yes.
Who don't reveal themselves to anyone else.
Yes.
They almost lead a double life, mm-hmm. these guys. Because, as you say, these are not, you know, like homeless people on the streets who are just looking for action. These are sometimes high-powered executives. These are people in important jobs and positions. I'm sure you might have even had people that you recognized, that you knew from the outside world. Did you ever have anyone walk through the door who was like a friend of yours before you'd gone into the sex work?
Absolutely. Someone from high school.
Wow.
And that was obviously quite a tough one to explain, going from an honor student to a working girl.
So they're like, hey, how are you doing? Oh, right.
Can I book you?
Wow. Is that how it goes?
They...
Huh.
Funny.
It wasn't awkward? It's a little bit more awkward.
I was
going to
say, yeah. Right? No, most definitely. Most definitely.
Jeez, this is something else.
The original plan with the degree was to study criminology.
Okay.
So being able to obviously comprehend minds that most people cannot comprehend. And I had an absolute fascination with it. But now with just doing the basic psychology and helping some of the girls. I do still counsel a few girls.
Mm-hmm.
For me, my story is one of inspiration. I obviously got out of the industry.
Okay, tell me about how that happened. What? Because it can't just be one event that made you suddenly change. You know, people always want a sudden solution. They want an epiphany. They want a moment of, oh, wow, that's what I'm going to do to get out of this. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's a process of and a whole lot of factors, right?
Absolutely. This is the part I don't think that you're going to like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are about four different occasions when, because of the drug use, I mean, you get drug-induced paranoia and. But it was like, it was being shown to me that you are on the wrong path.
Are you talking about God?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right. So God comes into your life. And I was
an atheist then.
Okay, but you feel that at this point, there is something more powerful directing you in another way.
Giving me another chance. And I was just sort of giving it the toffee all the time. Mm. You know? And the last time it happened was when the switch just went off. And like I said, self-rehabilitated drug addict. It is day 88 today. So almost 3 months.
88 days since you got off all drugs. And you haven't even gone back a little bit.
No. And I also stopped drinking as well.
Stopped drinking, no drugs, and you're not working anymore as a call girl?
No, not at all in the industry, no. As a counselor and also a personal trainer.
So now you're doing the personal training, you're doing the counseling, you're studying the degree in psychology.
Yes.
And you've been clean 88 days. So this is very recent, actually.
Yes.
So if I'd met you 6 months ago, you'd still be knee-deep in all of that.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. When you talk about self-rehabilitation, a lot of people would say that's not possible.
Mm. I think that, look, again, like I said, you're having a very different mind, wanting to comprehend how other people's minds worked and also testing the strength of my own mind. Once a decision is made, for me in my mind, it's made. And the switch was off and that was it. Stopped dead.
Cravings, cold turkey.
Detox between day 30 and day 90.
What does that feel like?
Dreadful. There was one instance where, because I still worked there being clean.
When did you stop with that work?
It's now almost a month ago.
Okay, very recently.
Yes.
You just got out of there.
Yes.
So you said there was one occasion.
Yes, where actually in the middle of a group booking, I had somewhat of, it felt like a seizure, but the whole body shaking, because obviously that they say between day 30 and day 90 is the worst. That's when your body really starts detoxing. And with prolonged use, it collects in your spinal cord and in the fat cells in your body. And that's when obviously when you detox.
That comes out.
There you go.
And you're on day 88, which means two more days, and you will have made it past the 90-day mark, which means you should be in the clear.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, no addict is ever completely
in the clear.
Free.
No,
You'll have to watch yourself.
Absolutely.
Every day. And this man in your life, is he helping you with this?
He is. He himself is a recovered alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So we both obviously understand addiction and how it works. I always make a joke that by breathing, he makes me happy.
Wow.
He never asked me once to stop the drugs. He never asked me once to leave the industry. There were just moments, obviously, after I had stopped the drugs and I felt it was time. God had shown me that, okay, here you go. Yeah, I'm giving you this life. And
it's a different choice.
Absolutely. You obviously get used to a certain kind of lifestyle, and you learn that the money isn't worth it. You can cry on a bicycle. You can cry in a BMW, a nice car. It's still crying.
Yeah. Wow. Are you going to use this extraordinary life experience now to tell other people how to avoid the pain and the difficulty? Are you going to be very open about it like you are with us this morning and just tell your story without expecting necessarily a good reaction because some people won't know how to deal with it.
Of course, of course. Now, look, I know there's a massive stigma attached to the industry.
Mm.
There's going to be a lot of judgment, which I'm prepared for. But the main goal is to help other girls in the industry as well, to counsel in places like that. Anyone that has a similar problem that can contact me, I would voluntarily counsel quite a few girls. Until obviously,
how big is the sex industry? I mean, you said you worked 4 days a week and you had a lot of bookings, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you were sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a huge demand in the market. Is there enough supply? Like, are there enough girls doing this? Is it a massive industry?
Absolutely. It's the oldest.
Yeah, I know it's the oldest profession, sure. But I mean, how many guys, and by the way, what sort of guys come to you during lunch hour? I'm curious about what kind of guy goes, all right, everybody, I'll see you just now, and leaves the office in his suit.
I'll see you just now.
Goes off to see you, and then goes straight back to the office.
They do.
Well, maybe sometimes that's the only time he can do it, because after hours would create suspicions with the wife.
Exactly. Oh. I was going to say. It's a pretty, pretty smart move.
Can I ask?
Just ask.
Well, no, I mean, I don't want you to feel like you have to answer every question that we ask you. I mean, if you don't want to, you don't have to. But, you know, sex for you obviously became a service that you offered.
Yes.
And, you know, you'd have back-to-back clients.
Yes.
Did you enjoy the sex? Would you orgasm? Or for you, was it just a process that you got through?
No, not necessarily. It was something that was pretty much null and void. It became null and void. Like I said, you stopped noticing the physical.
You're just numb.
You are. And you learn to connect with people on a different level. So
the because, you know, with sex, the physical stimulation, that's what, you know, the rest of us look for, and that's what we enjoy from it.
Of
but
course.
For a sex worker, it's not, you don't enjoy it as much as we'd like to think you do.
Look, no, definitely. Sex becomes just sex. However, then obviously, having sex with somebody that you really, really love.
So sex for you now, is an enjoyable thing. In other words, this hasn't poisoned the well.
No,
so to speak.
Not at all. Not at all. It's actually reminded me of the important things behind sex, the passion with somebody, loving somebody so much.
So your husband, your would-be husband, he sounds to me like the kind of guy who really we could all aspire to be this non-judgmental. Because a lot of men have a problem with this. A lot of men are like, oh, well, if she's been with every guy, I think it's a stupid attitude. But a lot of men think that way.
Yes.
How's he able to deal with the fact that you guys were actually dating while you were working? Does he just dissociate the physical from the emotional?
No, look, I think that, like I said, I would question if someone was 100% okay with it.
Hmm.
Just very much a mind like I have. Just sort of. We like to call it the art of thought distraction. You just don't think about it. We didn't speak about it. I wouldn't come home, obviously, and say, okay, well, I've had so many bookings out of respect for him.
Sure.
Because
he doesn't want to hear that.
No, of course not. Of course not. And I'd seen what it did to a previous relationship of mine where the guy really did try very hard to accept it, but he couldn't. And it actually started changing him, and he became, I think, a little bit insecure, and I don't think I treated him very nicely at all as well, also being heavily on the drugs then.
Yeah.
And, no, actually, so it did affect relationships in the past, absolutely.
I see a lot of tattoos. Yes. I mean, these are very, very cool tattoos. You've got sleeves, you've got tattoos on your hands, which is incredible. Are they all over your body?
On the legs, stomach, back. Yeah, I actually am a sponsored tattoo model as well.
Huh.
Yeah.
Um,
it's So what does that mean? You get new tattoos for free all the time, and people get to take pictures of you. And
I am sponsored by a studio called Eye Candy Tattoos.
Uh-huh.
Candy Lewis, an amazing lady. And, so she would... I have a fan page on Facebook for the tattoo modeling, and she would do artwork on me. And obviously, then photo shoots was promotion for her as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So they say tattoos are addictive too. I mean, once you start getting one or two of them, you want more.
Look, I think it's different for certain people. They say some people say you get addicted to the pain.
Mm-hmm.
I can promise you, I sat there every time, and you go like, "Why do I do this to myself?"
Okay, so you're not sitting there getting a thrill.
No.
But you like the way it looks afterwards.
Look, a lot of all my tattoos have meanings.
Okay.
And a lot of them were sort of a badge after getting through a hard time. So, like, okay, well, you got through that, so there you go, there's your reminder.
Lauren, we all come with an expiration date, but in the industry that you used to be in, that's even more significant. How does a gentleman's club tell, you know, one of their girls, listen...
You're old.
It's time for you to
get out.
It's time for you to go.
You're looking like leather, honey.
Or do you have to have a sense about you to leave before a club asks you, listen, or says to you, we can't keep you anymore. You're not booking enough clients anymore. It's time for you to go.
We obviously have a certain amount of hours that they expect from each girl, obviously, every week.
Now, what does the boss get? Does he get paid a commission? Does he charge you to be at the club?
No.
How does he make his money?
We never paid, obviously, to be there.
Oh, so how does he make his money?
It was his venue.
Does he charge an entrance fee?
They do, yes.
Okay, and then he would make the money off the drinks or whatever else. Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you feel, looking back now, is there a lot of regret, or are you, it is what it is, and now you've got to move on with a new chapter in your life?
Look, at the time, obviously, when I was there, there was a lot of self-justification.
Mm-hmm.
But do I feel guilty now about some of the covenants? I mean, I was involved in obviously helping break people, not stick to their wedding vows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But do I regret it? I don't, because I learned invaluable lessons in that industry. And it also gave me the passion for people and wanting to understand how people's minds work, wanting to help girls that are stuck in the industry. So without that, I wouldn't have become who I am today.
Yeah, so then in some ways it's kind of an accumulated wisdom, but you must be a little bit sad about some of the relationships that you don't have anymore, whether it's with friends, with family.
Look, a lot of people will be hearing it, obviously, for the first time today. If people don't want to be friends after that, then that's fine by me. I think that speaks a lot more about their character than it does about mine.
But it must have been painful for your mom, even.
My mom? No, not at all.
You don't think so?
No. No.
Is there anyone else who you might have, you know, hurt the feelings of, that you worry about, that you think about at night, that you feel lonely without?
My dad found out about it. Eventually I did tell him, and I know that it did hurt him a hell of a lot. So there, though, you know, especially now after leaving the industry and getting clean, the relationship that I've managed to build up with him is amazing.
So you're fixing that. I mean, like, you're going around and repairing, you fixed the drug addiction thing, mm-hmm. You got out of the industry, you're trying to start this relationship off in the right way with your man, you found God. Are you going to also try to repair all those other relationships that you may have let go of?
That's part of also any type of drug rehabilitation, is that you do apologize sincerely to the people that you may have hurt during your drug use. And yes, I have done that.
Well, it seems like you're on a you're on a new path.
Absolutely.
I mean, is this an exciting thing for you? Like you've got a reason to be a different kind of Lauren now than the Lauren you were before?
Yeah.
What's the dream?
I was definitely born, without a doubt, to help people.
Okay.
Be it girls in the industry, because I understand the industry.
Yeah.
And then they can obviously speak openly, and it's not sort of someone that if you call it book smart, it's book smart, and you've got practical experience as well. So you can really put yourself in their shoes. So, yeah, for people to find inspiration from the story, if they need to have counseling, that they get in touch with me.
Oh, so you're happy for people to contact you too?
Absolutely.
And particularly girls who are in the industry that might be a bit lost or alone at the moment.
Absolutely.
What will you do if you're walking through a shopping mall, and I'm sure this happened while you were working too, and one of the guys who's a client,
yes,
walks past you? And
you don't do anything.
Nothing. You no. Pretend you don't know each other.
That's correct, yes.
Just, no, nothing. Don't worry. Keep moving. Keep moving on. Do you think there's anything about that life that you will miss?
No. I believe fully with what's to come, hopefully from my experience in the industry.
Uh-huh.
No. You learn that, look, I mean, to earn a lot of money is, for most people, it's their biggest right. dream, we'll yeah. say.
You ask people, they think money will solve all their problems.
Absolutely. And it doesn't. It really doesn't. And I'm glad that I learned that. You can be blessed more in love and in faith and than with material objects.
Do you think, and this is really, this is a tough question because it might sound unfair, but I don't mean it to be unfair.
Mm.
Do you think that a lot of people who, you know, you find God or whatever, do you think that that's replacing one sort of addiction with another? In respect of, this is now adding the meaning that, that the other stuff added before, whether it was the drugs or anything else.
True that. Almost like using it like a crutch.
Yeah, it's kind of like a surrogate.
Yes. Look, once I started sort of making the decisions to, for example, get clean,
mm-hmm.
It's something that's very difficult to explain to other people. But just where, you know, you're on the right path. It's an amazing feeling. And I don't believe that it's a crutch, no. Not another crutch.
Monique says here in WeChat, Lauren, light shines brighter through cracked people.
There you go. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and a lot of other people saying that they're fascinated by your story and your life. I think a lot of people have a preconceived idea of what a call girl, a hooker, a sex worker Absolutely. Is like. A lot of people have a preconceived idea about what a drug addict is like.
Absolutely.
A lot of people have had horrible experiences in their own lives, and yes. they project those onto you. You've got to be a pretty tough person to get on with it.
Yes.
You're waking up in the morning feeling good now?
Absolutely. Better than ever, actually.
Really? Yes. Healthy, happy, ready to go.
There you go. More determined.
And loving your man.
Yes, absolutely.
And putting absolutely. Out for him without charging him.
Absolutely.
All right. You don't charge him. It's very important. Okay. Wow, this is incredible. You're a tattoo model?
That's correct. I work under the name Kath C.
Kath C. So yes. people can find you there?
Yes, on my fan page, yes. Or mm-hmm. on my personal profile. They are more than welcome to message me on there.
Kath C.
Yes.
Right, and your name, Lauren. I mean, you're out there and you're telling your whole story. You've let it all hang out.
There you go.
Nothing to hide.
No.
Wow. I wonder how many people are jealous of that, because it's amazing when you've got nothing to hide, right? And you've had an incredibly colorful life up to now. But when you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear.
Exactly.
Huh. All right. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Wow. Interesting conversation, hey, Mubs.
Very, very interesting, very insightful.
Yeah, if you missed any of that, you can listen to the podcast, and you can contact Lauren if you want to Cat C on Facebook as a tattoo model, or if you want to talk to her. Maybe you're one of those girls in the industry who's struggling a little bit at the moment. You need someone to, you know, just listen to you. This is the way to go. All right, wow. What an interesting morning. CliffCentral.com